Books with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Welcome, 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 guys. And Paul, I don't know if you knew this or not, but our little friend Wayne, it's his birthday. Or it's his birthday week, I should say. Yeah, it's his birthday week.
It is Wayne's birthday today.
It is today.
Yes. Oh, it is today. It's Wayne-mas. Happy Wayne-mas.
Happy birthday, Wayne. We're recording, so I'm not going to sing to you because then I'll never be able to run for president. But
yeah, that's what's keeping you from running.
What happened? I mean, are you both like a Christmas conceived babies? Like, what's going on here? Oh no, wait, Thanksgiving babies, right? Because Aaron, your birthday's next week.
Yes, it is. That is correct.
Mm-hmm. That you guys are correct. Thanksgiving gifts. You are. I don't even know. I'm not going to make dirty jokes because they're about your parents, but you know, like, it's a thing.
Our parents were horny after turkey dinner.
Yeah, turkey dinner.
On this show, we would never make a dirty joke about a mother.
No, yeah, ever, about Thanksgiving, ever. About stuffing the turkey. No,
uh-huh,
of course
uh-huh,
not.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I mean, you guys, less than a week apart. I mean, and a number of years, but you know, 5 days. Okay.
I'm going to keep this on the DL, okay? So you know, notice my quieter voice. But I think I know what I'm getting for my birthday. I think I'm getting, he looks over his shoulders, I think I'm getting a TV for the patio.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm very...
That's nice. I will tell you, I've been wanting something like that for years. What I've been doing is I've literally been taking out a TV and putting it on TV trays.
There have been conversations, not like, hey, what would you like for your birthday and would you like me to get you a TV? But, you know, she's been asking, you know, technical questions. So I suspect that she is either getting me a TV for my birthday or that she's getting one for her boyfriend. So one or the
other. Either Aaron's getting a TV for his birthday or he's getting disappointed.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. See, I've taken my laptop out to the gazebo to do like work for a part of the day out there.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, I don't bring my electronics outside. This is the one time I actually sit around and take actual books, and I like to go out after work with a short story compilation book and read a short story out there with the dogs running around. And
that's a nice thought.
Yeah, I try to do that after work to decompress and get away from technology because I spend all day staring at a monitor and then I spend all night staring at a TV.
Right. You know, last year I set myself a goal that I would read at least one book a month.
Uh-huh. How's that worked out for you?
I mean, I met the goal pretty quickly, but then I just gave up on it. I'm like, okay, well, I've hit my 12. No, I mean, it was one of those things that, like, I just kind of got distracted. But I was trying to do the read a real book thing, right? Like, to your point, Wayne, like, buy a physical book and read it. But what I would do is, you know, especially commuting to work and stuff, sometimes I would also get the audiobook via Audible so that I could use that commute time to get caught up, and then I'd hop back and read the physical book for the next bit, and you know, that kind of thing. So that worked out pretty well. And I got really big into, for some reason, like biographies and autobiographies, like nonfiction stuff, because it was probably because the fiction books I was choosing were not great.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year it's August, and I'm like, oh shit, I haven't read a single actual novel this year.
Yeah,
Aaron, I've listened to audiobooks.
Yeah.
Oh, I listen to so many audiobooks. But Aaron, you would appreciate the first short story anthology that I was doing out in the gazebo because it was my Tales from the Forbidden Land, all Planet of the Apes ones.
Oh, nice.
Set through the continuity of the original movies, the comics, the TV show, and the cartoon.
Oh, wow.
And Dan Abnett wrote two stories in it.
Oh, I like Dan Abnett. Yeah. Yeah,
what's that called again? Landingworth thing?
Tales from the Forbidden Zone. There are some really good stories in it too.
Huh? Check that out.
Hmm.
Well, I'm reading a science fiction series right now. I think Wayne, you've already read it. It's The Good Boys.
Yes.
About the dog soldiers, the soldiers who are humanoid like dogs. I'm reading that. I'm getting a big kick out of it.
Which book are you in?
I'm on the second one now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that series.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Paul, you were saying something.
Well, it wasn't actually book related at all. It was just going to be an update for our listeners and why we didn't record last weekend. A number of us had things going on. I don't know if you guys knew this. I was in Las Vegas last weekend.
Uh-huh.
I had a very horror-themed trip. I mean, the spooky season has begun, gentlemen. I know it's August 23rd as of this recording. It is October, as we know it in the business. Spooky season has begun.
Uh-huh.
So, I was out in Vegas last week. I went to the opening of, opening weekend of Universal Horror Unleashed, which is a new haunted house experience out in Las Vegas.
Now, you know, usually the ones that you tend to go to, and please correct me if I'm wrong, they're like amusement park related haunted houses, right? Yeah. So is this in an amusement park as well? Is it in a casino? Where is this one located? Because when I was looking at your Instagram last weekend, I was like, I'm not real sure where this is.
Yeah, so there's an area near the off strip called Area 15 out in Vegas, and it is pretty much like an entertainment district. It's not casino based, but they have like bars and restaurants and like cool experiences, like art type experiences, but also like escape rooms and fun like unusual type stuff. Like they've got a John Wick experience that's like interactive theater. They right near it, they have an It escape room based on, you know, the movie It, stuff like that. And so this is in that installation. And so Horror Unleashed is very much similar to the experience I go out to at the Universal Studios parks, except it's all indoors, which is lovely, because, you know, it was 100 degrees in Vegas. So it's all indoors, and they basically have this giant warehouse where they've got four distinct sections. So they've got like vampires, they've got like serial killers, they've got like haunted artifacts, and then they've got clowns. Those are the four distinct areas. And they also have four haunted houses as part of it. They've got Universal Monsters, they've got The Exorcist, they've got Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then they've got a Scarecrow house. And also multiple horror-themed like bars, you know, restaurants, things like that. They have a restaurant based on Blumhouse, so it has like Megan and the Black Phone and things like that. So it's similar to the experience I get by going to those theme park type things, but all in this giant warehouse. And I honestly had a blast. It was a great time. You know, we were there in Vegas for 2 days. And I will tell you, you know, and you guys know this as married gentlemen, there had to be some form of compromise, because I took the lead on planning this trip. So, you know, we did the Universal Horror Unleashed, and the next day I made reservations to go to Zach Bagans' Haunted Museum. And then I decided we should also go to Sliced Pizza, which is a horror movie themed pizzeria. And Jen at one point looks at me, she's like, so this is going to be a horror trip, huh? I'm like, oh.
Well, she's like, traveling with you, so.
True. Well, she, you know, we compromised.
Because Paul is a nightmare.
I am. That's the main horror. Uh-huh. But we also went to a Titanic exhibit, which I guess is horror in its own way. It was horrible. Yeah. But we went to a Titanic exhibit, which featured a number of artifacts from the original Titanic, including the largest, largest artifact from the Titanic. They had a giant chunk of the ship for you to take a look at.
I haven't seen the one they have in, you know, out there in Vegas, but that was a traveling exhibition before
I saw the traveling.
They exhibition. Had a permanent one. I saw it traveling, and then they have a number of permanent locations. One of them is Branson, Missouri.
Yep. I've been through that one.
I've been to it a couple times. I actually really enjoy the experience.
It was really cool. I mean, it wasn't as cool as Zach Bagans' Haunted Museum.
Or as cool as being in the water as the ship is sinking.
or as cool as Jack. Sorry. That's okay. None of them are offended.
Too soon.
But no, that was cool. So we had a weekend, a few days in Vegas, and, you know, Aaron, to ping on your interests, we had dinner at Taylor Sheridan's Four Sixes Ranch Steakhouse.
Very nice. How was that?
It was interesting. I will say the food was amazing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, 4-6's beef and stuff like that. However, it was just a pop-up experience. And what I mean by that is, you know, for us old people who don't always know what these young people do.
The youngsters.
They took an existing restaurant and they put an overlay on it to theme it to the 4-6's ranch. So the restaurant very much not built to be 4-6's. They just kind of threw like Texas themed rugs and blankets everywhere.
Bunch of hats. Put like
a fake wall in front. Yeah, kind of some hats, some some rodeo pictures, that kind of thing. So the theming was a little weird, but the food was fantastic.
Did they gerrymander you while you were there?
They did not gerrymander me, but you know,
because that would be truly Texan.
Very true.
Sorry, we're gonna need 5 more Republican seats, Paul.
At this table. How many Republicans are at this table? Because we need to add some seats.
They're adjusting your reservation to accommodate 5 more Republican seats. I like it.
So, Paul, I know some places have those pop-ups where the restaurant itself isn't anything, and it's every month they'll have a different pop-up come through.
Yeah, I've seen that. No, I think this was kind of like a hotel, you know, type restaurant, and they've just kind of like.
How did you feel about the reskinning? Because I've been to a couple of those pop, like, okay, why did you even bother? You know,
this one was a little lackluster from a reskinning perspective. Don't get me wrong, they took like they had a giant wall that covered the front of the restaurant. Mm-hmm. Because I think the restaurant is normally open, and they basically built this wall that has like, you know, this ranch theme to it, and that part was cool. But once you go through it, it's basically the same restaurant with some, like I said, some Texas pictures and some Texan rugs thrown around for theming. So the reskinning of the restaurant was not material in this situation, but I have been to others where, you know, it's a pop-up experience and they really go all out. This one was not that, but I mean, I will say, the food, the menu were all very good. I'm really glad I went. So that was cool. You know, it just kind of, we're in a little Taylor Sheridan drought until Tulsa King season 3 comes out in a few weeks. So
Paul, I'm pretty sure you got a lot of content for IOM Geek YouTube channel.
Yeah, well, I do have a video out there now for Universal Horror Unleashed. If you're interested, go check it out. You know, it's youtube.com/IOMGeek. I did not, you know, Zach Baggins, for anyone who doesn't know who Zach Baggins is, he's the guy who heads up the Ghost Adventures show on Travel Channel that's quite popular. He has a haunted museum full of haunted artifacts out in Vegas. And it's an old mansion that he acquired that used to actually have, according to, you know, legend, satanic rituals and sacrifices made in the basement. But he's also now filled it with haunted artifacts, things like not actually Annabelle, but other haunted dolls. There's also a certain portion of it that's very true crime. So you have, like, I don't know, Ted Bundy's ashes, you know, Charles Manson's art, shit like that. So it's a super, super creepy experience, but also no filming allowed.
The no filming is frustrating, but I would definitely go.
It is one of the coolest things, you know, that I've done in Las Vegas. If you are into spooky things, it doesn't really get spookier than that museum.
Yeah, what I am looking forward to is I'm watching your YouTube channel, waiting for you to go see the Wyatt Six
at Halloween exhibit. Horror Nights. Well, that next by this time next weekend, I will have already been to Halloween Horror Nights. So
yeah. For anyone that is a wrestling fan, there is a themed, I guess, haunted house would be an exhibit, whatever they're calling it.
The haunted house, yeah.
Yeah, themed after the wrestling faction, the Wyatt Six. And I have been really looking forward to seeing your opinion on it.
I think a lot of people are really looking forward to it, so I'm excited to check it out. They've also got Jason Voorhees this year. They have the Terrifier movies. They've got Fallout. Is another one of the houses.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing you and see whatever they let you film of that one too.
Yeah,
being a huge Fallout guy,
so should be fun. You know, this is the spooky season has begun. You know, we're kind of going into a few weeks of me, you know, doing some spooky season stuff, and you know, pumpkin beer is already on shelves. It's happy time. Yeah. It's happy time for Paul.
Aaron, you know what that means? We're gonna have to record off schedule a lot.
Yep. I was willing to record at 6 a.m. Vegas time last weekend, but I think Aaron was busy. But Aaron, you know, one of the things, so, you know, I took flights, you know, so from here, it, from where I live in Detroit, it's about 4 hours of a flight to Vegas, which sounds like a lot, but Vegas is 3 hours behind me in time. So ultimately, it's like I leave at 9 a.m., I get there at 10 a.m. It's kind of cool. I downloaded some stuff to watch, to watch on the plane. And, you know, but the one that won out was the new documentary series on Disney Plus about the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's what won out. But I did actually download Alien Earth. I just didn't get a chance to watch it. But I know Aaron has seen it, or at least the first few episodes. And, you know, Aaron, what did you think of Alien Earth?
I tell you what, Noah Hawley is, you know, the showrunner and lead director for Alien Earth. I'd like to point out Noah Hawley. He's the same guy who did the who show runs the TV version of Fargo, which is fantastic. Every season is fantastic. I love the Fargo series. He had a script pitch for Star Trek for the movies, and you know, Paramount and its infinite wisdom turned it down. And just like how Paramount turned down Terry Metalis on its Star Trek pitch, and Marvel picked him up, FX picked up Noah Hawley and made his Alien series. And guys, I'm not going to spoil anything here, but it's the creepiest damn thing. And each episode is even more creepy. And it's not just the regular xenomorph alien in this show, it's four other alien species, all of which are creepy as all get out. I just cannot begin to explain how very creepy this show is. I don't want to ruin anything for you, but it is the first time we are seeing anything on Earth, really, in this series. In the alien setting, because most everything happens in space. I it's really a very, very intriguing show. I immediately connected to several of the characters. And I have to say, this is the first time I have ever seen something with Timothy Oliphant in which I didn't want to immediately cuddle him. he plays a synth. And is, I'm not going to say creepy, but, you know, just really sort of otherworldly and disdainful of humanity. Even though he still has that swagger, there's just something off about him. And he's fantastic in the show. Everybody is fantastic in the show. Perfectly written, perfectly cast, perfectly directed. I love this show. And I think you guys are going to dig it as well. Particularly you, Wayne, who's never seen an alien before. And it's a good jumping on point for you, Wayne, because this is set, I think, 20 years prior to the first Alien movie.
That was actually going to be my first question for you, Aaron, was when it was set in the timeline.
Yeah,
because I have never seen anything Alien, but the trailers for this look so good plan on watching it.
It is so good, and I mean, it's hard to finish an episode and go, "Man, that's great," because I'm very tense in every single one of the episodes. But it's really big thumbs up. Highly recommend it. Also, highly recommend the first episode of this season of Peacemaker, which I watched this morning. I don't know what I was expecting this season, but it was not this. And big emotional connection with the show. And I'm not going to spoil anything other than to say hurry up and watch Peacemaker episode one. New episodes drop on Thursdays, I think. And it is awfully darn good.
Yeah, I will be resubscribing to Max for it.
You can also get caught up on Gilded Age. So, you know.
Well, I was thinking about waiting until a few more episodes are out.
Sure.
But there are a lot of things I want to watch that are on Max. I mean, I want to see Creature Commandos. I want to go back and rewatch a bunch of the old Justice League and Justice League Unlimited cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and also, I mean, so I will say I've actually never seen, I saw the first episode of Peacemaker and didn't continue with it. Not
all.
It's not intentional. I just kind of like forgot it. So maybe at some point I'll get to it. You know, it's just, there's only so many hours really.
Yeah, I understand.
And you know, again, and you know, sometimes you just got to watch a Kansas City Chiefs documentary, because what you guys don't have that I do is sports documentaries also. And that I have to fit that in too.
I just think that if you got up at 3:30 in the morning, you would be better equipped to fit in all of the important Fair programming point. Into your life.
Fair point. Well, and I will say next month is Welcome to Derry. On HBO, on Max, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
Did you make it to see Nobody 2 yet?
No, not yet. But I saw Nobody 1 on streaming, so I probably won't get around to it till it comes on stream.
What I saw you talking about seeing that, Aaron. What is Nobody?
Imagine John Wick, but with dad bod. It is super violent, and violence is the point. He is a guy that just seems like a nobody, and he is the biggest badass on the street. And it's Bob Odenkirk. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he was in Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. Yeah. He was in the TV sketch comedy show, Mr. Show. I think he's hilarious. He's primarily known for his comedy, but he's really turned into a very strong dramatic actor. And he's done for the first movie, he did like 3 years of training to do the work. And, you know, he's like all lean body mass, even though he looks like, you know, Mr. Dad Bod. It's a fantastic movie. And essentially, he plays a guy in the first movie. He's a guy who has retired from the business, but, you know, used to be, you know, in the hired muscle business and, you know, working for like, you know, top secret organizations, that kind of thing. And got out of the business, and then for reasons gets back into it. And in the second movie, he's working off a debt, you know, that he acquired in the first movie. And he decides to take his family on vacation. He's like, I'm taking some time off, taking my family on a family vacation. So imagine National Lampoon's Family Vacation as John Wick. I mean, it's hilarious. It's exciting. It's edge of your seat stuff. My wife loves these movies. So I feel like it's cross genre, has a cross genre appeal. Very enjoyable. And Christopher Lloyd's in it. So,
ooh, I like Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
Well, and you can watch the first one free on Prime currently. So,
yeah. I've watched Nobody probably 6-7 times. I mean, I think it's a very enjoyable, very rewatchable movie. And I mean, the lots of good blowing up, lots of good people just getting their face smashed in. And, you know, if the moral of John Wick is they shouldn't have killed his dog, the moral of Nobody 2 is they shouldn't have popped his daughter in the back of the head.
Oh,
yeah.
Don't do that.
Big fucking mistake. Just saying. And well, Sharon Stone plays the big bad in the movie.
Oh, no way. I haven't seen her in a few years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, I mean, just very enjoyable movie. So well, recommend.
You know, I'm really, you know, the things you mentioned, I really want to see Alien Earth. You know, I got to tell you guys, I had a very dark week this week.
A dark week.
Like in that, like, you know, obviously
how much murder did you do, Paul?
I did very little. Because I was too busy watching horror movies and reading dark comics. So last night, you know, I read my comic books. I read Exquisite Corpses last night. Mm. I read Absolute Batman issue 11, which is a very dark, gritty arc of Absolute Batman. And I read the book we're about to talk about has an ad at the end for a series called Beneath the Trees, where nobody sees, which is, I read, so I was like, it seems interesting. Let me check it out. Like, it's literally just a single picture in it that shows like anthropomorphic animals, like a bear, but the bear's hands are like covered in red. I'm like, oh, like that seems interesting. And it says, you know, as if David Lynch was directing an animated movie, I think is how they, characterized it. And I was like, and it says a cozy horror smash hit. And I was like, okay.
Cozy horror. That's a genre I've never heard of before.
I would say cozy horror is like, think of, you know, like old Midwest people wearing flannel in the woods, and you know, everyone's like, oh gosh, but one of them happens to be a serial killer.
So that, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. And so I picked up that Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. And I will say, so the first issue is included free, or included with the cost of your Comixology Unlimited. And I don't, maybe more issues are, I just happened to have a chance to read the first one. And I was like, this fucking book is great. It is so, so good. I don't want to spoil any of it. All I can say, you know, I've given enough information, but it is, if anything I said sounded interesting to you, then highly recommend picking it up. And even if it doesn't, it's included in the cost of your Comixology Unlimited subscription. Give the first issue a read. Now I'm dying to read how the rest of the story goes.
So it's funny that you mention it, because I saw that ad in the back of Event Horizon number one as well. And I was like, wow, that looks really interesting. Because, you know, it's almost like Winnie the Pooh with, you know, murder hands, right? Anyway, so that's not a honeypot he's been in. so I was intrigued by it. But you went the step further to, you know, see you know, what was available. So I saw that note from you this morning, and I'll check that out later this weekend. But Paul,
speaking of dark,
Event Horizon number one, I got to tell you, I had very much the same feeling about this comic book as I did when I saw Event Horizon the first time, which is I feel dirty.
Yeah.
I feel like there is a burden on my soul having read this comic book.
So that actually was why I wasn't interested in picking this up. I've never seen Event Horizon.
Oh, so Wayne, if so you dark. Have it, Paramount Plus, Event Horizon is included in your is now included in Paramount Plus, and it's Sam Neill, Lawrence Fishburne, back in 1997. And so the movie is basically science fiction horror. It's these characters who come across a deserted ship, the Event Horizon.
Well, they're sent out to find it.
Correct. They're sent out to find it because the Event Horizon was basically doing an experiment in teleportation, right? Folded space, basically.
They developed a gravity drive, which would fold space and allow you to travel like 1,000 light years at a time. Mm-hmm. And the gravity drive, apparently, they come to find out later, sends them straight to hell. And opens a gateway, right, that allows the bad things out. And so it becomes haunted house in space. Continue, Paul.
And it's an excellent, excellent movie.
It is.
That, you know, because you don't, for what it's worth, the hell stuff. Like, it's fucked up, but it really only comes into play, like, in the last quarter of the film.
Correct.
Up until then, it's this haunted house mystery. What happened to the crew, you know, with these science fiction elements? But then things go horribly awry in the last little bit of the film. And so this comic book, which I was both excited and worried about,
mm-hmm.
is a prequel to it. It basically explains what happened to the Event Horizon.
I was going to I wasn't clear on the position of this in time. I was like, I can't tell if this is a second ship named Event Horizon, or I mean, I was really not clear, and it's been a while since I've seen the movie to know the characters' names, right?
This honestly makes me want to revisit the movie, but this is the story of what happened leading up to the movie.
Leading up to the loss of the ship. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Was that written in the book somewhere? I did not see that.
It is on the, and it's easy to miss because it's on the title card, you know, the double page Jonathan Hickman title card. It says in 2040, the starship Event Horizon disappeared on its maiden voyage to Proxima Centauri. 7 years later, it reappeared, its crew all dead. This is the story of what happened. By the way, I'm pretty sure we're not folding space in 15 years from now, but you know, science fiction.
We can totally do it. Right? Now that we've got truth in our sciences, we could totally do it now.
Fair point.
All of the woke has been holding us back.
Getting very political today. But so this is, whereas Event Horizon, you know, I would categorize the Hellraiser-esque elements as really only popping up in, like I said, the last quarter of the movie. This leans into it right away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is, creepy and so unnerving. You know, because I got like three pages, I think like three or four pages into the book, you see like a demon, which is something that the first movie really, or that the movie really did well with subtlety,
right?
You don't really see like demons just sitting around, like, you know, doing stuff. And you do very early in this book. I'm like, I don't know that I'm going to like this, but the book is just genuinely unsettling and creepy.
Yeah.
It's really effective.
The movie has, there is an undertone of dread all the way through the movie, you know, and I was like, like I said, you know, I walked out of there feeling like my soul had been burdened having seen the film. It was very effective in setting that mood. And this book does the same. And I mean, just really cranks up the dread. But to your point, Paul, it was jarring to see the demon, you know, so early on, you know, like, oh, okay, I guess we're going to be a little bit more, you know, creature forward than we were in the film. And backing up to our earlier topic, Paul, or earlier conversation, I completely blew past that information on the title page. I saw the credits and I thought that's what that was over on the right, and I blew right past it.
It's very easy to miss. They probably should have put it on the top left instead of the bottom right.
Yeah, or boxed it, you know, so that it stands out. Because man, I blew right past that.
So Wayne, I know horror, you know, you're kind of on the fence about certain horrors, but I'd say this very much lives within the same type of genre as an Alien Earth or like the video game Dead Space. You know, these are, you know, haunted house movies set in a space station or a spaceship, essentially.
I would also say, I may have to go back and reread this now, understanding that it's a prequel and that it's telling the story of what happened on the original ship with its original crew. Because one of the things I noted is that it seemed like most of the crew are just terrible people. You know, and I'm just like, you know, and now I've got to go back and reread it with that context in mind and see if that kind of changes my opinion. I think the artwork for the book is very effective. And I wasn't so sure about that when I started. And by the end of the book, I was completely sold on the style that they chose.
I will tell you, because the first few pages, you know, like the book starts with the lead, one of the leads, the guy who actually designs the jump drive. Right. And I'm not going to go too far into spoiler territory, but his wife has committed suicide. And in that first page, you know, the scratchiness of the drawing, it's very Tim Bradstreet, I think, is the you know, the artist name.
It's very sketcherly, you know, almost sketchy. like the drawings are unfinished, you know, like they hadn't been inked, even though they have. You know, it's very loose. And you know, generally when I'm reading something that's science fiction, I want something very precise. You know, I want to see very clearly defined lines. But because this is horror and because of the emotional tone it's trying to set through the book, I think that's key to the emotional storytelling here. I think it works really well. So on that page where you see him cradling his dead, naked wife, you know, who's committed suicide.
Page one, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, okay, here's what you're going to get to enjoy in this book. I wasn't sold on that page, but again, by the end of the book, I was.
Yeah, same. I had the exact same reaction, and I got to say, I thought this book, I'm totally sold.
Yeah, I'm in. It was creepy as all get out, just like the movie. I think it did a really good job of being a spiritual sequel to the Event Horizon film. I think it really picks up that same sort of just awful that Event Horizon is. And I gotta say, I am one of those guys who really, really enjoyed Event Horizon, if you can say such a thing. I think it's a very effective horror movie. If the horror movie's job is to freak you out and give you all the scares and then dwell within you for a while after having seen it, I think Event Horizon does a marvelous job of that. And, you know, we have long said on this show that horror is really hard to do in comics. I think this is super effective.
Yeah, agreed. And what I would say is, if you want yourself a really good double feature. Watch In the Mouth of Madness, followed by Event Horizon. Mm-hmm. You'll feel nice and depressed and creeped out. And they both have Sam Neill. That was during Sam Neill's horror phase. And they are both, you know, just, I mean, I think excellent, you know, similar in design horror films. You know, there's a mystery that unravels into kind of like a post, like an apocalyptic nightmare type thing. But this book, I'm very much looking forward to seeing where it goes.
If you were going to do a trilogy, should you throw Omen 3, The Final Conflict in there, and watch Sam Neill as the Antichrist?
We could probably start with that one because it's not very good. Or maybe end with that so you leave on a lighter note.
That's what I was thinking. That was kind of the aperitif.
You know? Yeah, where the Antichrist becomes the president. Yeah.
Yeah. And just end it before Jesus shows up at the end. You know? just cut it by about 5 minutes. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally recommend Event Horizon if you're looking for something creepy. And, you know, I did an error, gentlemen, in that I read Detective Comics 1100 first. Before I went into everything that was dark and depressing. And I really should have read the book where Batman saves a blind kid's dog last. so that I could end my night on a light tone.
Yeah. And just to be clear.
Not blind kid, deaf kid. Sorry, apologies. Deaf kid.
Yeah, and just to be clear, this book is it's not one story. It is a collection of little short stories that give you snippets of Batman.
Which I normally don't like. You know, we've talked about these anniversary anthology issues before. Yep. I thought this book was great.
This one was so strong. The story you mentioned, there seems to be something storytelling-wise on each story that is different and worth mentioning. That one, there's no dialogue in the entire story. It is, because it's dealing with finding the dog for a deaf child, it is all silent.
Yeah.
No sound effects written in there, no dialogue. Everything on the page is just the art. And it was so good.
And this book is written and drawn by creative teams that have done Detective Comics in the past, right? So the first one is done by the current creative team, Tom Taylor and Michael Janine. The second book is written, or the second tale is written by Mariko Tamaki, who wrote Detective Comics, a few years back. Also, very good writer. And the third one is written by Greg Rucka, and then the fourth one is written by Dan Waters, who I'm not familiar with. Also, the fourth one is for me the one throwaway book, the one throwaway tale.
The fourth one is the only one I didn't care for.
Yeah, Bill Sienkiewicz on art too, which you know I'm not the biggest Sienkiewicz fan.
Boy, same.
The first and the third were the strong stories for me.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the third story where you get the perspective of nurses in Gotham on the overnight shift. And you come to figure out that they have names for the shifts. And that one had originally been, you know, all gunshot wounds and murder. And now it's basically the Batman shift where everyone comes in with broken bones and cuts.
Yeah, but at least they're coming in alive, and that's, you know, it's really well told. And that one's the one written by Greg Rucka, you know, who had such an iconic run.
That was the reason why I jumped into the book. I haven't read it yet, but why I purchased the book, because I saw Greg Rucka was on it, and I love his Batman stuff. Rucka's got a great style for realistic violence and technology. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a lot of background in that from his novel writing. And I really get a kick out of his Batman stuff.
Yeah, this story is so strong because it is, like I said, from the perspective of nurses in Gotham at a hospital. And you get their take on everything as a veteran nurse who was there before Batman is talking to a young one that's there and feeling overwhelmed by all the breaks and bruises and cuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's honestly the first story with it's a sweet, which is kind of a funny way of saying a Batman story, but the first story is just very sweet. You know, Tom Taylor, excellent art by Michael Janine. You know, this little deaf kid's dog gets kidnapped, and Batman and Ace are here to save the day.
Yeah,
it's so sweet.
My favorite moment in it is that last panel.
Yeah. It's honestly, you know, I mean, especially for a dog loving podcast like we are, it's a nice well told you know, story. So I mean, yeah. Detective Comics 1100, I mean, I would say it's a successful book. I really liked it.
They scared me for a moment.
They did, and I won't tell you how, but yeah, there was a moment where I was like, oh, this is, I can't recommend this to the other guys, but no, everything turns out okay. Don't worry. That's all I'll say.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week we've got a pretty decent sized week. So from DC Comics, we have Legion of Darkseid Part 2 from Joshua Williamson and Dan Mora. We talked quite a bit about the Part 1, which featured that the future has been taken over by Darkseid and the Legion now works for Darkseid. And Superman has to work with Superboy Prime.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and much
it's like been last a while time. Since we've had Prime, so.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, but when Superman issue 28 came out, so this is 29 coming out, it's written by Joshua Williamson with art by Dan Mora, you know, tells this time travel related to this whole, you know, all-in story that's going on in DC. And it came out the same week as Justice League Unlimited featuring the Quantum Quorum and, you know, and also playing into Doomsday being the timekeeper. I don't remember the character's name.
Time Trapper.
Yeah, how Doomsday was the Time Trapper. But that book, written by Mark Waid, also art by Dan Mora. So it felt like, I was really digging how the books kind of felt connected. Well, Justice League Unlimited issue 10, continuing that story, comes out this week too. So Dan, you get a double dose of Dan Mora if you're reading both books. And if you want a triple dose of Dan Mora, he does the cover art of Immortal Legend Batman. Written by Kyle Higgins and Matt Groom, which is very much taking a Power Rangers, Masked Rider, Kamen look, you know, at the Batman legend, where Batman is kind of a super suit, you know, a cosmic super suit that an average person finds. And so that's Immortal Legend Batman. It's an Elseworlds tale coming out next week. I'm also looking forward to that.
Yeah, Paul, the book you were just talking about, Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, issue number 2 comes out next week.
Well, so I will tell you, that's actually a sequel. Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, that had an arc, and then this is a sequel arc. And the second, that's what they're advertising. So I went back to the original Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees.
The OG.
Yeah. For Marvel Comics, we have the latest issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, which is, you know, currently building up its way towards Ultimate Endgame and whatever's happening there. You also have Doomed 2099. Which appears to be, you know, the future is doomed. The world is doomed, but does that include the world that is yet to be? A coalition from the future, including Old Man Logan, Rachel Summers Phoenix, Bishop, Cosmic Ghost Rider, the Maestro, and Deathlok say otherwise. So I guess this is Doom 2099 interacting with some of those other future tales from the Marvel Universe. Could be interesting. You know, might be worth checking out.
I always liked Doom 2099.
Yeah. And one of the books I'm looking forward to is James Tynion IV, who I'm a big fan of, does, you know, great superhero books, but also good horror books. You know, he was writing that book that you, Aaron, you and I were reading for a while, and I really got behind on about the writer, or like maybe he was a crime novelist or a podcaster or something like that, that, you know, like had a serial, had like was being tracked by a serial killer. Gosh, I'm trying to remember the name of it. I just remember it. The serial killer was dressed like Santa Claus.
Yes, and I cannot remember the name of the book, but that's a fantastic book. Yeah,
I kind of got away from it. The Deviant.
Deviant is really good. And I got Current not too long ago, but I don't think I finished it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's finished. So I need to hop back into that. But anyway, he is taking on Universal Monsters, The Invisible Man.
Ooh.
Coming from Image Comics. And issue 1 comes out next week from Image and Skybound. So well, I'm going to check that out, too.
Yeah, gotta get me some of that.
Okay.
So is that it, Paul? Is nothing else next week?
I mean, all that and more.
And more. Okay. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. Let us know how burdened your soul is reading Event Horizon number 1. We'd love to hear about it. Send us a note to ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. If we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise, which you'll have a hard time enjoying because your soul is so burdened.
This is true. But you can unburden your soul on social media. IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Very good. Well, you know, we are entering into spooky season, and you know, so it's a good time to, you know, to have that burdened soul. It's a good time for it.
Exactly.
That's right. All right, guys, we'll do this all over again soon. And join us right back here at IOMgeek.com.
We will see you then. Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.